In a vote earlier this week, Republicans in the U.S. Senate blocked an emergency spending bill from Democrats from going forward. That bill included about $50 billion in aid for Ukraine as it continues to fight back the Russian military, as well as about $14 billion in support for Israel's fight against Hamas. This comes as world leaders, including President Joe Biden and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, have been putting more pressure on Israel to protect Palestinian civilians in Gaza. Some Democrats in Congress say they could be doing more. Hamas's attack on October 7th killed at least 1,200 Israelis, and over 100 are still being reported as held hostage. Since then, more than 16,000 Palestinian civilians in Gaza have been killed by Israeli military forces, and more than three-quarters of the population displaced. That includes 12,000 killed in the last week after the end of a temporary pause in fighting. Those numbers, according to Gaza health officials, as reported by NPR. Central Time host Rob Ferret talked about all of this with Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson and Wisconsin Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan, who represents the state's 2nd District, earlier this week. We'll hear the conversation with Senator Johnson first. Rob talked with him on Wednesday before a procedural vote on that aid bill, which Johnson would vote against. Here's a listen.
Well, as I'm talking to you, you and your colleagues in the Senate are considering this spending bill proposed by Democrats. A lot in it, support for Ukraine, some support for Israel, provisions related to the southern border with Mexico. Especially, we'll be talking about Israel mostly. Can you talk about your thoughts on this? Should the Israeli funding be separate from this bill? How does it all roll together?
Well, I've certainly supported what House Republicans did in separating out the Israeli support and paying for it. And so they rose to the occasion very early on, passed about a $14.5 billion package for Israel and paid for it by reducing the number of IRS agents that would be harassing middle-income taxpayers. So I supported that measure. Senator Schumer, of course, hasn't taken that up, and they want to combine, you know, all the support for all these issues together. That's unfortunately one of the ways of Washington, where you take one funding stream or one funding measure that has almost unanimous support and tie it onto something that's more controversial. And that's what Senator Schumer is trying to do right now.
Well, Senator Schumer, I think, would accuse Senate Republicans of trying to tie border security measures to what could otherwise be cleaner international security funding bills. Make the case for attaching what you're looking for at the border to this Israel and Ukraine funding.
Well, first of all, it was President Biden that requested something like $14 billion for border security. But the problem with that is it's really not border security. What he would use the money for is, you know, basically more efficiently and effectively and quickly processing, dispersing more illegal migrants into this country. So the case to be made for what Republicans are trying to do right now is the Biden and Democrat open border policy is a clear and present danger to America. You have Hamas calling for days of rage. You have the FBI director saying that we are at a heightened threat level, that there's you know, we're at very high risk level from foreign terrorist organizations. We know how they can come into this country. Approximately 6 million people have migrated into this country and either been processed or, you know, encountered, processed, and dispersed, or about 1.7 million of that number have been what we call known gotaways. I refer to them as detected gotaways because we don't know who these people are. We have no idea where they are. So this represents an enormous national security threat. It ought to be our top priority when it comes to national security and defense spending. But this administration would rather secure Ukraine's border. We're just thinking, you know, whether you support Ukraine funding or not, our major emphasis ought to be securing our own border, and that's what Republicans are insisting on.
Do you support Ukraine funding?
I have mixed feelings about it. I have a great deal of sympathy for the Ukrainian people. Unfortunately, the way this war has been waged, it's not been waged successfully. I think we probably could have deterred Putin from ever invading Ukraine. I think there's a point in time early in the war when Putin had not overrun Ukraine. He was kind of back on his heels that and I supported $40 billion of funding at that point in time to replenish our own stockpile. But that didn't change Putin's mind. Now we have a 22-month-long grinding, bloody stalemate. The only way this war ends is through a negotiated settlement. Ukraine can't win this war. Russia won't lose it. They have nuclear weapons. Losing the war is existential to Putin. They can wait it out. Ukraine can't start bombing Moscow to reduce the support for the war in Russia. So this has to end in a negotiated settlement. And every day that goes by, more Ukrainians, civilians and soldiers die. More Russian conscripts die. I take no joy in that. More of Ukraine gets destroyed. So I don't think it's been a bad thing that Zelensky understands that he doesn't have an open checkbook for an endless war. Personally, I think what we should have done, rather than encourage a summer offensive, which obviously failed, we should have started moving Ukraine toward a defensive posture, more of a guerrilla war against an invading occupying force, as opposed to, you know, offensive and counteroffensives. It's been a very poor strategy. And in our secure briefing yesterday with Secretary Austin and Blinken, I mean, I asked, I think, what was the $64,000 question, how does this end? You know, how do we end this war? Because this war needs to end. And they didn't have a very satisfying answer.
Turning to Gaza now, there's a dire humanitarian situation there. Millions displaced, over 15,000 killed by what seem to be accepted estimates. As the U.S. continues to provide military aid to Israel, do you think it's appropriate to call on the Israeli government and military to minimize harm to Palestinian civilians?
Well, I wish Hamas would have minimized harm and done no harm to the 12 to 1,400 Israelis that they brutally slaughtered in the most horrific way. Yeah, I try and point out that on a percentage of population, 1,400 Israelis represents about 50,000 Americans. You can imagine what the American public would be demanding of its government in terms of retribution, but primarily defensive actions to make sure it never happened again. And so I there's no moral equivalency here. It's the citizens of Gaza that by and large voted in Hamas. I'm not saying every one of them supports Hamas, but a majority of them did. They've allowed Hamas to rule brutally, and then it's Hamas that are the terrorists here, not Israel. So I think Israel has every right to defend itself. War is horrific, which is why Israel basically created a multi-year ceasefire with Hamas. It's Hamas that broke that ceasefire in the most horrific and brutal way.
And Hamas, of course, has a strategy of basically parking itself under and near civilians and infrastructure. I think nobody disagrees, or nobody in the American government disagrees. They bear a lot of responsibility here. But that said, even some of the recently released hostages who had been held by Hamas in a meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu said, hey, you're bombing indiscriminately there. You were putting us at risk. Is there a case to be made for allowing more civilian aid into and for targeting more carefully to avoid civilian casualties?
Well, first of all, any aid that flows into Gaza will be controlled by Hamas. If you provide fuel, it'll provide fuel for the war effort. If you provide medicine, it'll be to provide medical care to their fighters. There is no such thing as aid to the Gaza civilians. This is all going to Hamas. So why would we support Hamas when Israel is trying to, and righteously and justifiably, trying to destroy Hamas, which is what they need to do, and we need to support their efforts in destroying Hamas?
What policy would you like to see the U.S. government take in the weeks to come?
Support Israel in their ability to defend itself and destroy Hamas. Get rid of that terror threat once and for all.
I've seen terrorism experts argue that civilian deaths in Gaza are recruiting tools, not just for Hamas, but for sympathetic organizations in many parts of the world. A ceasefire potentially could avoid that situation, avoid inspiring terror elsewhere. Do you think there's a case for that?
As I said, Israel initiated a ceasefire with Hamas over many, many years. They gave Gaza to the Palestinians. Palestinians then elected Hamas, and there's been a ceasefire. Israel hasn't gone on the offense. It's been rockets, coming in from Gaza, year after year, that every now and again Israel has to respond to, but it's always Hamas. It's always the Palestinians that are breaking that truce. So what's a ceasefire going to do here other than give Hamas more breathing room, allow them to survive to strike another day? No, Israel has to be allowed to destroy Hamas once and for all. They have to rid themselves of this threat. That's what Americans would certainly demand of our government had 50,000 of our citizens been brutally slaughtered in the manner that Hamas slaughtered Israeli citizens.
As we wrap up, what is your hope for, assuming Israel could destroy Hamas effectively in Gaza, what then is your hope for the future of Israel and Palestinians?
Well, one example was the Syrians in the Golan Heights. And there was, a huge international outcry when Israel imposed Israeli law on those Syrians. I think those Syrians feel themselves unbelievably lucky to be living under the legal framework and the protection of Israel right now. I personally, they've been pursuing a two-state solution for how many decades now? That was an attempt with giving Palestinians Gaza. It didn't work. I think at some point in time, Israel's just going to have to basically dictate and have its jurisdiction over these lands if they ever expect to have peace.
Effectively annexing Gaza, are you saying?
They're going to have to administer them, and they're going to have to enforce laws, and they're going to have to, you know, weed out terrorists. And Palestinians don't like it. They ought to be open to go to other Arab states that hopefully would accept them. That's, you know, there's been a real failure on the part of Arab states to take people from Palestine that simply cannot apparently live with Israel or Jews as their next door neighbors.
Senator Johnson, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Have a good day. Have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Central Time host Rob Ferret talking with Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson on Wednesday this week about the war in Gaza and financial support for Ukraine, Israel, and issues concerning the southern border with Mexico. Coming up, we'll hear Rob's interview with Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan on the same topics. That's next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Dean Knetter, in today for Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with members from Wisconsin's congressional delegation about the war in Gaza and U.S. support for Israel and Palestinians. We just heard Rob's interview with Senator Ron Johnson from earlier this week. Now we'll listen to Rob speaking with Wisconsin Democrat Mark Pocan from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. They talked yesterday.
A Democratic bill failed in the Senate yesterday. It would have provided billions of dollars in security assistance to Ukraine, as well as Israel and humanitarian relief in Gaza. Had some security measures on the southern border. Didn't satisfy Republicans. They were holding out for more on the border. What are your thoughts on that bill and what you'd like to see happen when it comes to spending, especially when it comes to Israel and Gaza?
Well, it appears the Republicans are trying to hold hostage the additional support to Ukraine currently over extra border protections. I don't think Russia cares what we're doing at our southern border as we're trying to provide the support for Ukraine to continue to be able to defend itself against an invading country. We would hope that people would not put those kind of lines in the sand. If we don't have support to Ukraine by the end of the year, it could be really devastating to Ukraine's efforts. And, you know, I think that this is some gamesmanship that's pretty dangerous, and I hope that that will end.
The argument from Republicans, including Senator Ron Johnson, is that our southern border is a direct security issue right on our border. Ukraine, big an issue as it might be further away. Does it make sense to deal with a national security issue close to home at the same time as we're looking at Ukraine and Israel?
Well, there actually is border money in the bill. Ron Johnson would be required to read the bill in order to understand that. But to try to hold it hostage for that is really a problem. You know, because I guarantee if you gave them what they want there, they're just going to ask for something else. This is how they've operated all year. They're, as you know, this is the least productive Congress, I believe, since the Depression. This is exactly why. So this is one area I just wish we'd quit playing games, quit trying to be too clever by half, quit trying to gain, followers on social media, and just do what's important to do. And right now, that would be supporting especially the people in Ukraine.
As we've mentioned on the show, there's a dire humanitarian situation in Gaza now. Millions displaced, over 15,000 killed. As the U.S. provides military aid to Israel, you've made calls on Israel to minimize harm to Palestinian civilians. Do you think that Congress or other elements of the U.S. government should be doing more to pressure Israel to listen to those calls to protect Palestinian civilians?
Honestly, I think the White House has got the most influence here, and they've been saying the same thing, quite honestly, is they're saying be as surgical as possible in going after Hamas. Clearly, you know, 16,000 people dead, including 6,000 plus children, it is not surgical. You know, kids are not Hamas fighters, clearly. And I think that still is a valid concern. You know, you can't just take out 100 people in order to get one Hamas fighter. You can do it in a far better way, especially when Israel has some of the best intelligence allegedly on the planet. So we would like them to behave differently. I think some of this has been collective punishment, kind of anger at the Palestinian people in Gaza over Hamas. But I think it's been misdirected. And it also could bring in other countries like Iran, or could bring in Hezbollah into this conflict. That would be much more deadly, both for people in Israel and Palestine. So I think the president and those of us who've called for restraint, it's a smart call.
A call for restraint is one thing. Do you think there should be strings attached to U.S. military aid to Israel with lines? If you do X with the weapons we're providing, we will stop the flow of them?
I think it's going to see what the Senate sends to us. So they're going to be sending that. I think, you know, whenever we give U.S. aid, it's fine to have restrictions on how it can be used. I mean, we don't want it used indiscriminately if it's going to be weaponry. And I think that's a fair assessment to have if that's how the Senate decides to proceed.
Some of your colleagues have made a direct call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The argument from Israel and supporters is a ceasefire benefits Hamas first and foremost, would allow them time to regroup. What are your thoughts on calls for a ceasefire?
You know, I've said all along, Israel has every right to go after Hamas for what happened October 7th. What they're doing is not just going after Hamas. I really do believe it's collective punishment of Palestinians, and that is going too far. 6,000 dead kids is going too far. So, you know, during the period we had a ceasefire, I think that proved we could have something in place. But, you know, Hamas has to release hostages. Hamas has to pay a price for what it did. And I think we can have a balance that does both. Right now, I do feel that the power imbalance is really taking advantage and killing too many innocent civilians in Gaza.
Talking to Representative Mark Pocan about the latest on U.S. policy in Gaza. There have been concerns now in domestic politics in the U.S. that the issues surrounding the war in Gaza and Democratic responses to it could impact them on Election Day and re-election chances in Congress, maybe even in the race for the White House. Are you concerned about that?
Well, I think every issue, you know, impacts how people look at the election. Clearly, younger people in particular are having a real concern about the number of deaths. In fact, I shouldn't even say to younger people. I think we keep saying that because we see that most active in the streets. I can tell you from constituents, 2,800 people in my district, which is a huge number on any issue, have reached out to us asking for a ceasefire. I mean, I think people are watching this. They do see the imbalance of power, and they are concerned when kids in particular are killed during a conflict. So as awful as it was for the 29 kids that were killed on October 7th in Israel, the 6,000 kids in Gaza are also of concern, and we're certainly hearing it from our constituents.
Supposing some kind of ceasefire can be reached and at least the immediate conflict slowed down, what are your hopes for a resolution in the next year or two?
You know, honestly, if there is a silver lining to everything that's happened, and I know it sometimes seems hard to, I've heard more talk about a two-state solution than I have in the last decade, and that's good because I think we do need to work towards, that's been the longstanding U.S. position, a land for both Israelis and a land for Palestinians. And we've watched that slipping away, I think, in the last decade. It's certainly been a reinvigorated conversation, and that would be positive if that could come out of this.
As we wrap up, are there things you'd like to hear and see from the White House that you haven't so far since October 7th?
You know, I think the White House doesn't wear their foreign policy generally on their sleeve. They have a lot of very private conversations, and that's how Joe Biden operates. And, you know, when he starts raising it a little more in public, like we've heard him say about bombing hospitals and being more surgical and how they're going after Hamas, I think it's because he's trying to make sure that those things can happen, and he's not feeling like he's been able to accomplish it privately in conversations. But I do think the White House is doing the most they can to try to minimize any deaths of either Israelis or Palestinians in trying to hopefully have a positive influence. You know, I do think it's good that we have a special envoy now there. And I think anything we can do to help bring not only peace, but a two-state solution is going to be in the best interest of the United States.
Representative Pocan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Of course. Thank you.
That was Central Time host Rob Ferret speaking with Wisconsin Representative Mark Pocan, a Democrat from the 2nd Congressional District, yesterday. Earlier, we heard Rob's interview from Wednesday with Senator Ron Johnson. We talked with the two lawmakers about aid priorities for Ukraine and Israel and the partisan disagreements about linking that with border security, as well as influencing Israel to minimize attacks on Palestinian civilians in Gaza, and how each elected official could see a resolution to the conflict.